Good morning. This is Talking Animals. My guests today will be Judy Bourdignon and Michael Jernigan, who both work for Southeastern Guide Dogs, and we'll be discussing the organization's Paws for Patriots program. We'll speak with Judy and Michael in a few moments here. Later in the program is the prize for Name That Animal Tune. We'll give away Tears and Other Stories, a double CD by Richard X. Heyman, a wonderful musician and past guest on Talking Animals. Also, as we've already alluded to, sort of, next Wednesday, February 20th, is the first day of the WMNF Winter Fun Drive, and I'll be seeking your support that morning for Talking Animals and offering my usual assortment of exclusive thank you gifts, including a really cool brand new Talking Animals t-shirt. More on all this later. Actually, if you're online right now, I invite you to head to talkinganimals.net to see the t-shirt and other thank you gifts. Right now, though, we're kicking off the show with an animal tune. This is Nico Case with People Got a Lot of Nerve Here on Talking Animals. That was Nico Case with People Got a Lot of Nerve. I'm Duncan Strauss. This is Talking Animals. And my guests today, Judy Bourdignon and Michael Jernigan, are with Southeastern Guide Dogs and have joined us in studio chiefly to discuss the organization's multifaceted Paws for Patriots program. So with a reminder, we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing us at dj@wmnf.org. Let's welcome Judy Bourdignon and Michael Jernigan to Talking Animals. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for... I'm still working on the Judy pronunciation for everybody out there listening. I've had a tutorial and I'm studying up and still have a little work to do.
You did great.
All right. Well, thanks so much for joining us in studios. I mentioned at the end of Randy's show, it's a rare treat for us, for me, to have the guests in studio. It just often works out that it needs to be by phone. So thank you guys so much for coming. And, of course, as we'll get into a little bit more specifically, Michael has his dog Brittany here. So we have an actual animal in the studio, in the house, for Talking Animals. So let's sort of start at the beginning or thereabouts. But, in fact, before we get into Paws for Patriots, let's just take a moment, if we could, and maybe you guys could just sort of quickly outline what Southeastern Guide Dogs is and what it does. Michael, do you want to?
Southeastern Guide Dogs is a guide dog.
Sorry, hold on one sec, Mike. We neglected. There you go. Now your mic's on. There you go.
Southeastern
there
Guide Dogs.
Go. Thanks.
Southeastern Guide Dogs is a guide dog school that trains guide dogs. Pretty evident by the name. We are in Palmetto, Florida. We've been around for 30 years. We are kind of a local jewel that a lot of people don't know about in the Tampa Bay area. We've been training guide dogs. We've done over 2,700 guide dog teams in that 30 years. We do about 75 guide dog teams a year. It's a wonderful, wonderful place that, you know, I'm blind, has made a large impact on my life and has made a large impact on many people's lives.
Yeah, I mean, we did, I think it was a couple of years ago, maybe a little bit longer ago than that, we did have one of the trainers that worked kind of more on that side, Heidi Ilgen, I think it
yeah.
is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So some of our listeners might recall a little bit about that. But today we're more kind of specifically talking about Paws for Patriots program. So maybe you guys could talk about how that got started. What were the circumstances that sort of led to its formation, sort of as an offshoot of the mothership, really, as I understand it, right?
Well, it's not necessarily an offshoot of the mothership. Paws for Patriots is a program that we have within Southeastern Guide Dogs. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you how it got started because I helped start it.
Great.
In January of 2006, I was wounded by a roadside bomb in Iraq in August of 2004. Among all my various wounds, I lost both of my eyes. I was contacted by one of our board members at Southeastern Guide Dogs who wanted to help, said, you know, he called my mom and said, we're here. We want to help your son if and when he's ready. From there, I continued to go through surgeries. And when I finally got out of the Marine Corps, I came down to Southeastern Guide Dogs in January of 2006. And we launched Paws for Patriots. It originally started as just a small program within Southeastern Guide Dogs to help place guide dogs with blind and visually impaired veterans from our latest combat operations in Iraq and Afghanistan. And it's a wildly popular program that has grown since then.
So that was the beginning. That was the
infancy,
right,
as you would want to say.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, because I understand now there's sort of three elements, which we'll get into, I guess, in more detail as we keep talking here. But it sounds like the very first one, not surprising, was really specifically guide dogs for veterans like yourself who had lost their sight in combat situations.
Yes.
So who were the first dogs in that program? I mean, how were they selected in the infancy of the program?
Well, the program wasn't really any different than our standard Paws for Independence program that we have.
Okay.
So we used the same selection process that we would use for regular individuals looking for a guide dog. You know, one of the things that we did with Paws for Patriots is we identified a need for guide dogs in the veteran community. We had noticed that more veterans were coming back with visual impairment and blindness, and a lot of it had to do with blast injuries, multiple blast injuries. You know, I was involved in three IEDs in just 6 months.
Wow.
And you get your bell rung every time. And one of the things that can happen is long-term side effects can cause some visual impairment. You know, so we identified that, and we used the same processes that we already had in place at Southeastern Guide Dogs that we had been successfully doing for many years to aid these veterans that are coming back.
Sure. And then since that was obviously the very beginnings of the program, how and when did it kind of evolve into then also including the veteran service dogs?
Well, It's interesting. Like I said, we had this service for veterans. It became wildly popular.
Mm-hmm.
So we opened it up to all veterans, from all conflicts, peacetime veterans, it didn't matter, veterans of all ages. If you were suffering visual impairment from combat, or if you were suffering visual impairment from something age-related, maybe macular degeneration, any different various conditions that cause visual impairment, we opened up the program for all of those veterans. And then I think it was more recently, just in the last couple of years, we have opened up this veteran service dog program. And I think I'm going to let Judy talk a little bit more about this because Judy is our lead on veteran service dogs.
Right, Judy, you're the trainer of those dogs, if I'm not mistaken, right?
I am, yeah. And I've been working with this program since March of 2011. I was invited to come in and help work with these dogs. Basically, back what we tried to do is at Southeastern Guide Dogs, the primary focus is to develop world-class guide dogs. But those dogs, it's not cut out for every dog. Not mm-hmm. every dog has the strict qualifications that are required to be a guide dog. And so those dogs would then be assessed for other career possibilities. You know, as responsible stewards of our most valuable resource, which is our dogs. For those who don't make it as guide dogs, we do want to consider other ways that these dogs can help the community. And one option that became very obvious was helping to develop these dogs further to assist the veterans that are coming back from combat diagnosed with post-traumatic stress. And so the dogs that are assessed and are deemed suitable for the veteran service dog program are dogs that have to have the qualities of being able to connect with the veteran. They have to show a level of trainability. And even if they don't meet that strict criteria of guide dog work, they still can learn commands that can help the veteran mitigate their experience of post-traumatic stress. And so that's what we've been doing for the last 2 years.
Sure. So the dogs that that enter that program, from what you're saying, are ones that, for one reason or another, weren't quite cut out or just wasn't a good fit
right.
for them to be guide dogs for vision impaired folks.
Correct.
Okay. And then now, is there any beyond sort of getting along with that veteran and being sort of responsive, what other sort of criteria are there for those dogs to help with PTSD, for example?
Well, they have to be trainable. We do train them specific commands. There are specific commands that we teach these dogs that help define the personal boundary for these veterans. For somebody who's experiencing post-traumatic stress, often people invading their personal space is a big deal. So we teach the dogs a series of commands that help define that personal boundary. One of the commands is block, where the dog will position itself between the veteran and anybody who's coming in front of them. And that veteran can utilize that to create a distance and that safe space around them. Another command that we teach is watch, where the dog will literally go to the veteran's side when commanded and look behind them. Now, these are not guard dogs. They're not going to growl if somebody comes up from behind them, but they'll signal by wagging their tail, doing that little dog shimmy that a friendly dog will do, or perk their ears up. And so the veteran, instead of feeling like they always have to watch their back to see who's coming behind them, they can check out at their grocery store or get an item off of a grocery shelf, have the dog in the watch position, and the dog, when it signals that somebody's coming behind them, they then have options to stay safe. And sometimes those commands are enough to get that individual out in the middle of the day instead of going to a store at 3 a.m. because they feel safer, for example.
Right. I mean, we've done a number of shows on various ways that dogs can help people with PTSD, and then once actually a show about dogs, military mm-hmm. dogs, who actually develop symptoms comparable to PTSD,
right,
which is
right.
pretty interesting. But so from that, I think it's pretty clear that one of the things that's often very difficult for people experiencing PTSD is that crowds being out and about is a huge challenge. So mm-hmm. so the block command and some of the things you just described, I mean, does that really make it sufficient enough, easier enough for people to go out and with those dogs kind of in tow to sort of pave the way and make sure, like you say, nobody's coming up from behind?
Well, they do. And the dog itself, just by its very nature and the fact that it is trained, it is well-behaved in public, can act and serve as a grounding for that veteran. You know, when they have flashbacks, something triggers them, a smell, a sound, a voice might trigger a flashback to their combat experience. The dog itself can serve as a grounding place. You know, the dog will nudge them. The dog, they can bend down and touch the dog. One command that we do is where they tap their shoulders. They can sit down and tap their shoulders if they feel overwhelmed by a crowd or an experience that they're in, and tell the dog hug. And while people think, oh, that's a feel-good command, it really isn't. It's a grounding command that when they hold on to that dog, they're in the present, and they can just exhale and hold on until that moment passes,
sort of
until
a calming, that experience passes. Calming exercise, yeah.
And the feedback's been incredible.
What winds up happening in that situation is, you know, you start concentrating on that dog, that physical element that's in front of you. You feel the dog's fur, you feel the dog's heartbeat, and it refocuses your attention off the stress and anxiety that a person might be experiencing and onto that contact with that animal, which then allows the stress and anxiety to dissipate.
Right.
You know,
takes you out of that.
I speak from personal experience.
Yeah.
And that's enough often to get these individuals out of their apartments, out of their homes, and into the light of day versus going to a store, like I said, at 3 a.m.
Sure.
Maybe they're able to reduce the level of medications that they're taking. Mm-hmm. We've had individuals tell us stories about, you know, they never would go out to eat. And one fellow, as soon as he got back from receiving his dog, took his wife out to eat. Hadn't been in a restaurant in four years.
Oh, my goodness.
So you can imagine how that affects their family, not just that individual.
Right.
It's a big deal.
Yeah.
It's a big deal.
So, Judy, for a moment, maybe you could talk about your background. You said that you were sort of invited to come into this program a couple years ago, if I'm not mistaken. So what sort of work were you doing with dogs prior to entering this program?
Well, it was with Southeastern Guide Dogs.
Okay.
Since 2006, my family and I, we have been puppy raisers. We've raised four puppies from scratch and helped finish three more. And it's always something that I've always been interested in. I've seen the value of dogs in my own life. And so I was invited to come in and help with another trainer get this program off the ground, and became so interested and loved the training that I went and obtained my certification as a professional trainer, specializing in behavior modification, advanced obedience, and just ways that we could work with these dogs that don't make it as guide dogs, but would be incredible veteran service dogs. And so now I am now working as the trainer for this program, and I love it. I think I have the best job in the world.
That's great. So if I follow you, then you weren't actually a professional dog trainer at that moment that you entered the program.
No.
You were a puppy raiser and obviously someone who probably helped and volunteered at Southeastern.
Right.
And wow, that's interesting because I would have guessed that you would have come to it from a training background and then just sort of veered in.
I actually worked as a volunteer for 6 months doing this, and then was invited on staff as an apprentice trainer. And this summer went back and got my full certification as a professional trainer so that I could do this job well.
That's great. And that's really inspiring. But before we went on air, we were talking a little bit about volunteer opportunities at Southeastern.
Right,
we'll maybe come back and ask Michael to talk a little bit more about those perhaps. But so then how did you develop the curriculum, if that's the right word, for training dogs to become veteran service dogs in this way?
Well, I think the experience of working with the other trainer that I worked with, the experience that he had with this program, kind of evolved, seeing what the need of these veterans were, what commands would work best for them, what would help mitigate their experiences, their need for PTSD mitigation, sometimes including balance mitigation, which we would also help with if there were medications or balance issues from their combat situations. And so we developed a protocol of the commands that we would teach, the watch, the block, the hug, and there's other commands as well that would lend to those. And since I have come back from my training, I've incorporated a training that is very different from guide dogs. You know, these dogs are not being trained as guide dogs, so we don't go through the same paces that a guide dog would have to do. They have to learn, how many commands does a guide dog need to know, Mike?
40.
Over 40.
Wow.
The dogs that I train don't really need to know more than 10 specific commands. It's more their behavior and their obedience that is required.
Sure.
So we do it in phases. And so I've developed a protocol of phases that these dogs have to perfect and do well before they are then placed as a service dog for a veteran. And that takes anywhere from 3 to 5 months.
Okay, that was actually one of my next questions. Uh-huh. Another question was, as you're describing this, are the dogs that become the veteran service dogs still all drawn from the pool of dogs who started out to be guide dogs for people with visual impairments? Or from what you're saying, it sounds like there's really not necessarily you know, a need for them to have that initial background, even if they didn't quite work out to remain in that program. So are some of the dogs drawn from other programs or other kinds of sources?
They're not. They all come. Okay. They all start out. As Mike said, you know, the primary mission of Southeastern Guide Dogs is to facilitate the independence and mobility of a visually impaired person through these guide dogs.
Sure.
And so the dogs that I train were dogs that were born and bred at Southeastern Guide Dogs, looking for the qualities that a guide dog would need. They were raised in puppy raiser homes. They come in for training. And for whatever reasons, as they go through their guide dog training with a professional trainer, some of them just can't handle that responsibility, or maybe they have minor physical situations that a visually impaired person couldn't care for, but somebody who could see would have no issue with.
Yeah.
So those are the dogs, or there are some dogs that just are more affectionate than others. Mm-hmm. And not that they wouldn't make a good guide dog, but if they can't focus on their work, maybe they would make a better veteran service dog because there is less required of them in that program. Although it's just as important.
Right.
It's different.
Yeah. No, I just thought because of what you said about the very different requirements in terms of the commands and other things that they wouldn't necessarily have to come from that pool, but it sounds like in this case they still do.
We build on their training as guide dogs and training. We actually, that's a benefit to this program that I think even sets us apart, because the dogs are well trained. When I get them, they're very good dogs because they've gone through the raising program.
It's so approximately 40% of our dogs actually grow up and become guide dogs.
Right.
Of the 60% left, they're still very quality animals.
Absolutely.
That go into our various different programs. They might become veteran service dogs. They might go into our gifted canine program or our canine connections program. A whole lot of them actually do become working dogs. You know, Judy was talking about different reasons why a dog might not make a good guide dog. Maybe that dog likes to sniff too much. You know, dogs have an incredible sense of smell, and he might get distracted by odors. Well, that is going to be a dog, although we don't do the training, we do release those dogs to other organizations that do the training, that would make a great law enforcement dog, say, sniffing out munitions or sniffing out drugs or even working in arson investigations, sniffing propellants after fires have gone off. You know, so these dogs are
cancer detecting dogs that when they have a particularly refined sense of smell.
There are
so many uses,
applications for dogs these days. And we breed excellent quality dogs that might not become guide dogs, but are perfectly capable of working in some other field.
And being of service to the community. And that we feel like that's just the responsible thing to do.
Sure.
So it's exciting.
That is exciting. Well, this is Talking Animals. If you just tuned in, we're speaking with Judy Bourdignon and Michael Jernigan of Southeastern Guide Dogs, discussing the Paws for Patriots program. If you'd like to ask Judy or Michael a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663, or you can email us at dj@wmnf.org. In fact, we've had one caller holding for quite some time. Let's get them involved. Hi, you're on Talking Animals.
Hi, my name is Vicki.
Hi, Vicki.
And my question is, I have a friend who says her husband fights the war about 3 nights a month. How is a guide dog trained to deal with unexpected outbursts in the middle of the night when it's usually quiet?
I can take that. As a guide dog, I can't answer to the guide dog training of how they would do it, but I know. Go ahead, Mike.
That wouldn't be the function of a guide dog.
Exactly.
A guide dog guides blind or visually impaired people.
But to answer your question, Vicki, the dogs, the veteran service dogs, many of them are placed with individuals who do have night terrors. They wake up with nightmares. They wake up having flashbacks. The way that I train these dogs, they do sleep beside the bed, and often the veterans will allow the dogs to sleep in bed with them. And it goes back to that grounding experience that I was talking about earlier. For many of these individuals, as they're trained to work with these dogs, we work with them and train them to work with their dogs. We teach them how to utilize the dog as a grounding tool when they have those flashbacks. And the response that we've gotten from these individuals who have those night terrors, they say they will just reach over and feel that the dog is there. Sometimes before they go to bed, just knowing that the dog is there is enough to stave that off. But if it doesn't, when they wake up, they will feel the dog, the dog will be right there with them. And that's just the natural responsiveness of these dogs. They will help to bring that individual back to the present with much success.
Words, if the dog would bark, would that tend to scare the person having the nightmare?
Well, the dog wouldn't bark. That we don't teach the dog to. In fact, we teach these dogs not to bark because you're right. That could be a trigger for the individual. But just their presence there, they would nudge. When they feel the stress of their handler, they will nudge the handler. And we encourage and reward that response in them during training. And so that's how they would compensate for that.
And correct me if
I'm wrong. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Vicki, for your call.
Thank you, Vicki.
And Judy, correct me if I'm wrong, but to sort of just elaborate on that a little bit, at least when we've had other folks in talking about dogs that are trained to help people experiencing PTSD and night terrors, et cetera, that much like what you described, they're next to the bed, sometimes they're on the bed.
Right.
And when they're experiencing those kind of things in the night, it's not unlike what you guys, Michael, described earlier about sort of hugging the animal to take you out of that anxiety when you're out in a crowded area or something else. And it just seems to calm the dog. And people have talked quite poignantly about just how important that is in the midst of a night terror. And then they calm back down and drift off to sleep.
Right. And as the bond between that veteran and his dog grows, these dogs are naturally sensitive to the moods and the emotions of their handler. And the dogs can smell the stress. They can feel that stress before that individual often knows that it's building. And they will begin to seek comfort from, seek interaction. Kind of dogs will naturally do that. How many of us have been in tears and our dogs will come up to us and not leave us alone? Well, these dogs do the same thing and they're rewarded when they do, and that's how we train them.
Yeah.
And they'll often feel that stress before the individual does.
Yeah, it's sort of anticipatory.
And they'll get in their face, which is wonderful.
Yeah. I know you're going to need me in a sec, so I'm here early. Yeah.
Right.
That's great. Well, so you mentioned how long the training typically takes. Let's talk a little bit about how much it costs. Is there a general cost for the training? And then, who bears that cost once a dog is paired with someone through the program?
You bet. Mike, you want to?
For a guide dog. To produce a guide dog team, we have a lifetime commitment to our students and our graduates. It's approximately a $60,000 expense per team. Okay, now that expense is the veteran or the student or the graduate doesn't have to spend $60,000 for a guide dog. Mm-hmm. We don't require any money from anybody coming to Southeastern Guide Dogs to get trained with a guide dog or a veteran service dog. All of that expense is taken on by private donors, organizations, private corporations that donate money. We do not take any federal funds from either national or state governments or local governments. We do all of that fundraising on our own. Our veteran service dogs, if I'm not mistaken, about $39,000.
Just about
$39,000, $40,000 to produce one of these veteran service dog teams. So it's not a cheap expense.
Right.
But I can tell you, coming from somebody who is blind and has post-traumatic stress, the impact that these dogs can have on your life is amazing. And you really can't put a price on it.
Yeah, it's priceless.
You know? Yeah. And when you think about it, when you come to Southeastern Guide Dogs, we're not asking you for a dime. You know, now we do have to generate donations so that we can keep providing our services to our community.
Sure. And so, Michael, so it sounds like that Brittany, your dog, then is a dog that was trained for impaired people. And also, is it also a double sort of duty dog?
No. Okay. My dog was trained as a guide dog.
Okay.
I received Brittany 6 years ago, actually on March 28th of 2007. And she was trained specifically as a guide dog. We did not have the veteran service dog program at the time.
Okay.
Okay.
Right.
I got Brittany. I was actually living in the Washington, D.C. area at the time, getting ready to go back to college. Brittany has kind of, I guess, taken on some of those roles herself just naturally.
Right.
One of the things that she naturally does is the blocking command.
Yeah.
When I'm sitting there talking to somebody, she actually will get in between us so that that person, and at first I thought it was so I don't step forward and bump into people. And now it could be because she doesn't want those people getting too close to me because she knows I like to have a little distance between me and another person. You know, we developed our own hug command, so to speak. It's not as it's not quite as great as the ones that they're doing right now. But I'll sit down and then Brittany will back into me, kind of into my chest, so that I can lean over and hug her from the back around to the front. And it serves the exact same purpose. It was something that Brittany and I came up with together before the Veteran Service Dog Program was there.
Yeah.
So it's interesting because Brittany is trained as a guide dog.
Right.
But just through living with me for the last 6 years, she's absorbed a tiny bit of that Veteran Service Dog role.
Yeah, right. Sounds like she's got the smarts and the instincts.
Excellent dog.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, I lived in the Washington, D.C. area for 2 years with Brittany. We've lived in St. Petersburg for almost 4 years now together, and she's just been there with me every step of the way.
Yeah.
We've traveled from coast to coast around the country, 49 round-trip flights together, everywhere from New York City to Los Angeles.
Wow.
And she's been with me every step of the way.
And she's certainly, for people out there listening, I haven't yet had a chance to see a picture of Brittany, very, very sweet dog, and we had a nice brief conversation earlier. So let me ask you that now, both Judy and Michael, is now that the program has evolved, and obviously it's a number of years past the time where Michael was paired with Brittany, are there dogs then that are sort of double trained in a way?
Not necessarily,
right.
No.
No.
Okay. I think it just evolves the way that Mike has described.
Yeah.
We have many veterans who are recipients of our guide dogs. I think in the last class, there were how many?
Six.
Were six.
Five or six veterans.
Class.
One of the things that it's difficult to train these dogs as a dual role. And I'll tell you why. It's because we start training our dogs before we know who they're going to be placed with.
Right.
Okay. So Brittany was being trained before I was even known that I was coming to this class for that class. So if you start training these dogs as guide dogs and veteran service dogs, you're wasting resources.
But I think what Mike was talking about also is that the dog just kind of instinctually will become responsive to the handler
and
to
one of the things
handler's
that,
needs.
That my dog has developed over the years is when I start to get anxious, like anxiety starts to build, it does happen over time, it builds. Before I even know that I'm to my breaking point, my dog's already going to my wife, cueing my wife, saying there's something wrong with him. You know, come check
him
out.
How does that cue manifest itself? What does she do when she goes to your wife?
She really spends more time with my wife. She'll keep coming up to my wife over and over again until either I deal with it or my wife deals with it or the problem manifests itself. And it's very interesting that she has learned that over the years, that when I start having this anxiety build, that she can go to my wife and almost tell my wife. It's like just tapping her on the shoulder saying, there's something wrong with Mike.
Wow.
Maybe we need to do something.
Check it
and
out.
And she's or, there yeah. for me the yeah. entire time. You know, but she cues my wife. And my wife actually picked up on this. I did not. I didn't realize what was going on. But now every once in a while, you know, my wife will walk in and just say, you know, is there anything going on right now? Let's sit down and talk because Brittany keeps coming to me.
I have it on good authority that there's something we should discuss. Yeah,
the dog knows.
Well, so this sounds really cool, and I love the idea that someone who needs a guide dog can get it despite the obviously considerable cost of training. So if someone's listening to the program today, a veteran that maybe is dealing with PTSD things, but so far hasn't taking any steps, or at least hasn't taken the steps of even exploring a guide dog. If they came to you today, this afternoon, and said, hey, I heard all about this, and how would that work? I mean, how are the actual finances handled? Just because I'm curious, it seems like I've heard a lot, again, doing various programs like this over the year, that sometimes insurance companies, if they need to be involved, bulk at, like, you know, if you're visually impaired, okay, that's clear cut. But PTSD, sometimes depending on, you know, the diagnosis, they may or may not pay on a certain claim or the certain cost of having some assistance. But are you saying that through Southeastern, that's never an issue because...
Yeah, we have no charge.
Once this hypothetical guy that I'm talking about calls up this afternoon and says, hey, I think I might need a dog. I've really been struggling with PTSD. And whatever happens after that, eventually, if they are paired with a dog, they're not reaching in their pocket for anything.
We will never charge any one of our students for a dog. Not even a dollar. Okay? Now, you have to understand that there are costs that go along with that dog once you bring them home. Dogs have to eat. There's food costs. There's veterinary costs, things like that.
Right. Okay. But basic, you know.
Day-to-day. Exact same cost that you would have if you had a house pet, you know. But we're not going to ask you for a dollar. We're not going to say, you know, to get one of our dogs, you have to give us X amount of dollars. We don't do that. That's not what we want to do in our community. We're here to help our community. That's what we want to do.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, that's great. And just because, again, I think a lot of people would think, I think there's also some myths and misconceptions out there that wouldn't be within reach. And so the sad thing is a lot of them wouldn't explore this.
Runs their programs differently.
Yeah.
You know, I cannot speak for any other organization.
Sure.
I can speak for Southeastern Guide Dogs, and we do not charge.
Yeah. One thing that I can say is that as puppy raisers back in 2006, it was my family's desire to help give back to the community, to give our children an example of how we would give back to the community. And that was by raising these puppies. But it was also our joy to contribute to Southeastern Guide Dogs because we felt like it was making it possible for the individuals who would not be able to afford to receive this kind of assistance could receive it free of charge. And we feel, I tell you what, we sleep well at night. We feel like it's an investment in the community from our standpoint as our family. Our family believes. We believe that this is a valuable thing to support.
Sure.
And we've never looked back.
No, that's great. And I think obviously a key thing that hopefully a show like this and all the other efforts that everyone does over there is getting the word out. Because again, I would just think there would be so many people who would say, well, yeah, this sounds great. I could use that kind of help, but I just couldn't possibly afford that, not knowing that we just discussed in this case, it wouldn't cost them anything.
You know, I think one of the things that people have to understand is at Southeastern Guide Dogs, first and foremost, we are a guide dog school.
Yeah.
Veteran Service Dogs is a small program that we have within Southeastern Guide Dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Our mission at Southeastern Guide Dogs is to help blind and visually impaired people.
Sure.
To facilitate independence and mobility. We have identified a need with our Veteran Service Dogs. And I told you we produce approximately 75 guide dog teams a year. The amount of veteran service dog teams we produce a year is a smaller amount. And within the veteran service dog, besides being placed with an individual veteran, we do place facility therapy dogs. We have four dogs at Walter Reed Hospital placed there through Southeastern Guide Dogs that work in the physical therapy department and visit patients in their rooms. You know, it's interesting, when you go to Building 61 at Walter Reed, which used to be National Naval Medical Center, and the two hospitals, the Navy Hospital and the Army Hospital, have merged, and they are now at in Bethesda, Maryland, and they are the Walter Reed National Military Medical Center now, where I did all of my recovery. You go into Building 61, there are a lot of people there that have prosthetic limbs, legs, arms, things like that, more than you would want to see. But unfortunately, that is one of the casualties of war, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Coming from a guy who went through physical therapy with a knee injury, went through occupational therapy with a hand injury, I can tell you it's very easy to tell your physical therapist, I don't want to play today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when a dog comes running up to you with a ball in its mouth and just wants to literally play with you, it's hard to tell that dog no. And our physical therapist at Walter Reed and some of the other facilities that we place these dogs tell us that these dogs get more work done than they do. And if you think about it, if you're a veteran that is trying to get used to moving around on a prosthetic leg, when you get up and play fetch with a dog, all of a sudden, you're not only enjoying what you're doing playing fetch with this dog, but you're learning how to balance on your prosthetic leg. You're learning how to move around on your prosthetic leg. The same with a prosthetic arm. You're learning how to toss a ball with a prosthetic arm, things like that. So inadvertently, they are doing physical therapy.
Sure.
You know, and they're doing it in a very real way. We placed, most recently, we placed a facility therapy dog, it's a mouthful, at Andrews Air Force Base.
We did.
And before that, one of my my favorite places, Camp Lejeune Marine Corps Base in Jacksonville, North Carolina, Judy went up there and placed a dog, Olivia, there to help a lot of the veterans in the mental hygiene clinic.
Wow.
You know,
that's great.
It's a program that is a very small program at Southeastern Guide Dogs, and we are trying to help as many people as we can, but we can only do so much. Our main goal at Southeastern is guide dogs.
Sure.
You know.
Well, with that in mind, I mean, as, again, this sounds like a small program, but with huge impact.
Yes, very true, yeah. Very true.
And let's, because we're just sort of nearing the end of our time here, so back to, again, being able to provide this amazing service and you know, effectively free of charge for the folks that are paired up. Let's talk about this kind of huge sort of triple fundraiser coming up.
Our walkathon.
Yeah, let's talk about that before
now,
we...
For many years, we've been doing a walkathon for many years, and we've done one a year, right? And last year, we did ours at Vannoy Park in St. Petersburg, Florida. Gorgeous area. I grew up in that area. It's a wonderful place, and it was hugely successful. And we realized that, you know, at Southeastern Guide Dogs, we're all over the Tampa Bay area. We have people that volunteer from all over the place. So this year, we're doing three walkathons. On February 23rd, we will be at Rossi Park in Bradenton with our walkathon. On March 2nd, we'll be in Sarasota. Do you remember the name of the park we're going to be at?
At Sarasota? I don't.
It's Payne Park.
Payne Park.
I try to help out when I can. Yeah.
And thank you very much. I should know that. And on March 9th this year, we're going to be back at Vannoy Park in St. Petersburg. We encourage people to come out and get involved. It is a way to help us raise funds for Southeastern Guide Dogs. There's a few different ways that you can do it. You can come out and walk and pay through a registration fee. You can help us sell raffle tickets. We are doing a raffle for our walkathon. Grand prize is $10,000.
Wow.
Second prize isn't too shabby either. It's a 7-day cruise. And the third prize is an iPad. We have a website, www.sitstaygive.org, that you can create an online giving page for either an individual or create a team. Like, I've created a team. It's called Stars and Stripes Forever. So if you were to go to that Sit, Stay, Give site and then type in the team name, it would bring you to our online giving page. You know, it's an excellent way that you can help support Southeastern Guide Dogs and help generate funds outside the general area. We all remember when we used to give our parents the program to go sell popcorn for the Boy Scouts and stuff. They'd take it to work and they'd sell it to their coworkers.
Sure.
Well, now you can hit up all of your family and their coworkers around the country.
Great. You know, much more efficient.
We also have our website, www.guidedogs.org. And if anybody was interested in donating to the cause, they can go right on to guidedogs.org and donate through there via PayPal or a credit card. And, you know, you can mail in a check or cash. There are a lot of different ways that you can support Southeastern Guide Dogs. We would love to have people come out to our walkathons, you know, especially that we're doing three this year instead of just one. We'd love to have a great showing at Bradenton, Sarasota, and in St. Petersburg.
That sounds great. Well, folks, we have just about reached the end of our time, but we have been speaking with Judy Bordignon and Michael Jernigan.
You're doing
from
well
Southeastern.
On that name.
I'm getting better.
I was wrong into the learning curve earlier
this morning, but I'm getting there. And of course, our silent hero here has been Brittany, Michael's lovely guide dog. So again, thanks for joining us in studio. Again, as Michael alluded to, the website is guidedogs.org, and just chock full of information, how you can get involved, more about the walkathons, how you can volunteer, and just so many other ways that you can participate in, obviously, an array of great programs that they're providing. So thank you guys so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having us here.
Absolutely. All right, let's step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner. I wanted to do something by Jerry Seinfeld today because he'll be performing next month at the Straz Center. We have one pair of insanely good tickets, fourth row center. And for the right pre-pledge, the tickets could be yours. This is Jerry Seinfeld with part of a piece called Horses on today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
When you're on the road, which I am not now, you have to do whatever anybody suggests to do for that day. because you got to do something. A couple weeks ago, we were in Pittsburgh. We went to the track, bet on the horses. This is idiotic. I think it's fun, but I never would think for a second that I could figure out what horse is going to win. I don't even think the horses know that they're racing. Do they? I mean, are they walking back to the stable afterwards going, I was third, I was fifth, I was ninth. You cut me off, watch that. I'll kick your ass next time. I think more likely they're thinking, oat bag, I get my oat bag now. Oat bag time for me. I mean, I'm sure the horses have some idea that the jockey is in a hurry. I mean, he's on him, he's urging him, he's hitting him, come on, come on, you know. So this is important that I get somewhere for this guy quick, but they must get to the end and go, we were just here, what was the point of that? This is where we were. That was the longest possible route you could take to get where you wanted to be. Why don't we just stay here? We would have been first. I'll tell you one thing the horses definitely do not know. They do not know if you should accidentally trip and break your leg at any point during the race, we're going to blow your brains out. I think they're missing that little tidbit of information. If they knew that, you'd see some mighty careful stepping coming down that home stretch. Easy, fellas, easy. You win, I'll place, whatever it is. It's all the same oat bag, fellas. The important thing is your health.
All right. That was Jerry Seinfeld with part of a piece called Horses, taken from his album I'm Telling You for the Last Time. And again, we have an awesome pair of tickets to see Jerry Seinfeld at the Strat Center next month. Fourth row from the stage, right smack dab in the center. You could score those tickets with the right pre-pledge in support of Talking Animals and WMNF in our Winter Fun Drive that starts next Wednesday. But pledge before that is the smart thing to do. Go visit talkinganimals.net for more details about that and to see all our other exclusive thank you gifts, which you can only get by supporting Talking Animals. And including our fab new Talking Animals t-shirt, which we're very, very excited about. So I'm Duncan Strauss. Towards the end of the show, which we're rapidly approaching now, we'll play Name That Animal Tune. The winner will win Tears and Other Stories, a double CD by Richard X. Heyman, a wonderful pop rock musician and past guest on Talking Animals. He's kind of a infamous cat rescuer and in New York City and environs. So anyways, that's happening in a few minutes here on Talking Animals. Right now it's time for, I guess, a truncated version of animal news and announcements. So let's get into some things coming up. Saturday, February 23rd, it's Neighborhood Pitbull Day, a family-friendly event for pitbull terriers and their folks. Again, Saturday, February 23rd from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Town and Country Recreation Center, 6039 Hanley Road. This is under the auspices of the Hillsborough County Animal Services, Best Friends Animal Society, and Hillsborough Animal Health Foundation. So you can go to hillsboroughcounty.org/animalservices to find out more about that. Also, if you've been sort of toying with the idea of going vegan or just, you know, cutting back, we have a great, great opportunity and a cool thing coming up. It's the Meat-Free March, and the Girls Gone Green and Florida Voices for Animals are joining forces to bring No Meat March to Tampa in March of 2013. So you basically get help and you take a pledge, and it's all kinds of cool things, and there's all kinds of information by going to their website, nomeatmeat.com. We'll get into that again hopefully next week during the fun drive, give a little more detail. We're just running short on time. And you know, we talk often about feral cats and community cats and how they're handled locally. And Florida Southern College in Lakeland is using an interesting approach to deal with a feral cat population on its campus. It will build a half dozen what it calls cat cafes. The small structures will look like the many campus buildings designed by famed architect Frank Lloyd Wright. The buildings are in the planning phase, but they should be in place sometime in the near future. The college estimates are about 60 feral cats on campus. They're apparently fed by students. The Alpha Chi Omega sorority will put food in the cat cafes in hopes the cats will get used to eating them and make it easier to catch them. So once the cats are caught, the SPCA in Lakeland will spay, neuter, and microchip them in a mobile facility it will bring to the campus. The cats will then be released back on the campus. The belief is that since the cats can't reproduce, the feral cat population will diminish over time. And lastly, just want to remind you, we have that cool tail wagging tutors. A dog is a reader's best friend. If your child's nervous about reading or just generally needs a little encouragement, these tail wagging tutors might be the answer. They're specially trained to listen patiently while a child practices reading and gains more confidence. And their next event is Thursday, February 21st at 6 p.m. at Safety Harbor Public Library. You can get more information about that by calling 727-724-1525. So, Fred, we have just about reached to the end of today's edition of Talking Animals, but let's quickly play Name That Animal tune, where this is not a giveaway. You do not need to, this is a giveaway, but you do not need to be a WMNF member to win. It'll be a prize, a copy of Tears and Other Stories, a double CD by Richard X. Heyman, to the first person who calls in the correct title of this animal tune. 813-239-9663. It's Name That Animal tune on Talking Animals. All right, we have officially now reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. Getting some calls, we'll try to take those off the air and see if we have a winner. We will be back next Wednesday, February 20th, for our Fun Drive show, joined by my, as always, by my friend Laura Taylor. Yes, Lounge Laura Taylor. We'll be asking for your support of Talking Animals as WMNF launches its Winter Fun Drive. Next Wednesday morning, February 20th. I hope you'll join us for that. And again, at 9 a.m., our new time for Talk Animals. These shows are always peppy and fun. And did I mention our exclusive thank you gifts? Visit TalkingAnimals.net for the lowdown. Some really cool things there, if I do say so myself. Talking Animals broadcast outreach consultant and Jill of all trades is Libby Busalis. My thanks to her. She's here today shooting some video and pictures of our cool guests. So big, big thanks to her. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. Happy Valentine's Day to everyone, including my Valentine, Colleen McGar. We're closing out today's show with an animal song from the Eels, who have a great new album out, but no animal song this time. Yet it's almost incumbent on me to play the Eels today. I can't really explain why exactly, but let's just say it's wildly indulgent. But keep an eye on Facebook. Maybe I'll post something less cryptic about this. This is the Eels with an alternative version of Dogface Boy. Taking us up to the NPR News on WMNF Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weekiwatchee, and beyond. Thanks for listening. Speak with you again next Wednesday at 9 a.m. on Talking Animals. Thanks.
Coming home from the school today, crying all along the way. Ain't no way for a boy to be begging mom to shave me, please. You little punks think you own this town. Well, someday someone's gonna bring you down. Life ain't pretty for a dog-faced boy. Life ain't pretty for a dog-faced boy. You take back what you said now. That's the last time I cry. You don't know what it is to be a friend now, till I walk beside you on the street now. Mom won't shave me, Jesus.